And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show, Monday through on the Athletic Podcast Network.
One of the best players to ever play this game, and why, this organization has been able to ride him to so much success. It's just absolutely incredible.
Marcus in the back.
Marcus Thompson, the Athletic. Draymond, when you see Steph shoot like that and play like that, you know, everybody can witness that part. But what could you say about, like, his toughness, you know, against a defense like this, you know, with his foot hobbled? What could you say about how resilient he is?
Same thing I've always said. Him was one of the most resilient, toughest guys that ever played with. The way defenses guard him, they're constantly grabbing, and he just continues to play. He don't make much of it. He just continues to do what he does. So, you know, it just says a lot about his toughness. And his competitive nature and what it truly means to be a winner.
Welcome to the Basket Buds edition of the Athletic NBA Show podcast on the Athletic Podcast Network. I'm Zach Harper. We got today Mo Dakhil. We got James Edwards III. We've got Jay King. We got Jared Weiss. We've got a 2-2 NBA Finals series. I was rooting for Steph Curry and the Warriors this past game four, because I wanted it 2-2. I wanted it to be best of three. I wanted it to just close out in a very epic way. Maybe we will get horrible games the rest of the way, but I didn't want a 3-1 series. I wouldn't have wanted a 3-1 series the other way. I wanted to be competitive after the conference finals we were given. I think we need a great NBA finals to finish this out.
We deserve a great NBA finals.
We do, yes, to make it through the slop that was that Warriors-Mavericks series, and then the slop that was that Heat-Celtics series. None of them were good, other than, I guess, maybe the end of Game 7 for Heat-Celtics. But even then, it was bad basketball.
And the end of Game 6 was pretty good, and in Boston, Miami.
Yeah, the Jimmy Butler game was a good one.
That was a good one. Right. Come on, okay, man. Heat culture. You're on that island. Like, how are you not?
I would love if Heat culture included some close games in the conference finals. That's what I would love. Okay.
Fair enough.
Deciding everything every goddamn game. And so we finally get good series here with it 2-2, heading back to San Francisco for Monday night's game 5 at the Chase Center. And Steph, I mean, look, if at this point, if you're not on board with the Steph Curry story, the Steph Curry legacy, the Steph Curry resume, all this stuff, you want to find excuses for why he's maybe not as great as people say he is, you're an idiot. There's no way to soften it. There's no way to present it any other way. The nicest I can be is calling you an idiot. Because
we're a LeBron fan.
What are we waiting for?
Are people not just yelling at Strawman, though? Because everyone knows Stephen Curry is one of the best players of all time.
No, there are legit people
who think
that.
I've heard a lot of people screaming at the people who don't respect Steph enough. But I think everyone respects Steph.
Did you not see the T-Mac comments?
Point, to the highest level.
It's former players.
Oscar Robertson's been shitting on him for years. T-Mac never got out of the first round. Bucky is like the greatest shooter he's ever seen.
Yo, no, but like,
never got out of the first round. This dude is dragging Nemanja Bjelica to the finals.
That's the thing. It's former players, and it's not guys like even in the 1800s like Bob Cousy. It's guys that were playing in the 2000s that are trashing him. It's getting ridiculous at this point.
Hey, T-Mac just started following me on Twitter, so we're not going to slander T-Mac here, okay?
Hey, he follows me too. Just want to put that out there.
Hey, back in the day, I had the full Adidas T-Mac sweatsuit. I had the T-Mac 1 and 2. Like, yeah,
we talked about this recently.
The disgusting blue ones that looked like a boat.
All gray in terms of the sweatsuits. Yes, I had the all blue, the white and blue, the all white, the patent leather white. Like, I had it all with T-Mac, man.
My current hoop shoes are, I bought a pair of the blue patent leather and the red patent leather, and I wear the mismatch. That's my current
Your feet
shoes.
Must fucking hurt. They were terrible to play.
And they're heavy. I'm actually they're thinking about switching shit. Them out.
Oh my God.
They're heavy as fuck.
You're gonna play in like some Zoom Generations or something after this, and you're gonna dunk because you're gonna be so light.
It's so different playing basketball, man. Without 10-pound weights. It's so great.
You're gonna be playing.
I would not have taken you for one of those, James. Like,
and
one
I
of
wear
those
size
dudes
13,
who just wants people to compliment his hoop shoes instead of wearing something.
You would not have taken him for that?
Do you not know who James Edwards is?
He complimented Jason Tatum's jacket, the one that had six different jackets in
James
it.
James is swag over substance every day.
I thought on the court he'd be a little different, but I guess
James' whole career is to get on
the
league
fits. Accessories.
Yeah,
my whole goal in life now is to look like I can hoop because I'm getting old. Like, I just want people to know that, right. Like, I look like I'm still not, like, I want to get picked up first, just how I look.
I think it's all in the way you hold a basketball, by the way.
That too, and you got to like start in when you're shooting around, just like show the form. It's all about showing the form.
I do not believe in starting close to the basket and warming up, shooting your way out.
Zach doesn't get close to the basket, range. Period.
Why am I gonna shoot these little 4-footers in front of the basket to warm up? I'm not going to be there all game. Like, man, we're 3-point line to 3-point line here. That's all we need to do.
Bruh. New York strip steak?
Ooh. This is the Basketball Buds.
Braised beef short ribs? Dang!
With Zach Harper and your favorite athletic writers.
Get mad at me, bro. I'm gone.
Speaking of 3-pointer, Steph Curry, he was out of his mind. I don't think we're yelling at straw men still with Steph. Like, there are plenty of people who are still, because he doesn't have the finals MVP or whatever on his resume, they're trying to pretend like there's, you know, he's not as historic as he is. But man, I can't remember who put this clip, but someone put the clip up of Steph like hitting that three and running up and like talking shit in front of the Celtics bench and everything and saying
that was
like
such
a glorious moment. I knew what at this point like the Celtics were in trouble, right? Because Steph is never like he celebrates, but he's not like that necessarily, like so early. And so Jay, like in terms of you're in the building, you're seeing this in real time and it's coming through in a different way than it does on TV. Like what was that like seeing how the Celtics and the Celtics crowd reacted to just whenever Steph had the ball?
Yeah, I don't think it's just the crowd. I think it's the coaches. It's probably the players. He's just a terrifying man. And it doesn't matter if he's covered. It doesn't matter if he's 7 feet behind the three-point arc. The one pull-up he hit when he was like 8 feet behind the arc, came around a screen, and Horford was like pretty close to him. Just the quickest release ever.
Pretty close is not good enough, man.
What is going on? And then you can see the panic in the player's eyes when they lose him for a second. That play when he drove and then they kicked out to Gary Payton the second.
Oh, yeah, and he just waited, man.
And you can see the whole team exhale like, oh, Steph doesn't have the ball anymore. That motherfucker ain't going to shoot it.
He just keeps creeping along that baseline, man.
And then Steph runs over to the three-point arc, and you can just see the panic set in, and they're like, oh, man, we lost that guy.
That was like the first relocation three I think we've had from Steph in this series. Like Boston had done a pretty good job on like, hey, even when he gives up the ball, he's still dangerous. But that's what's so scary about it.
No, he hasn't had to because they keep going with this fucking drop coverage against him. Stop!
I actually thought they did a better job of that in game four. They were much closer to the level of the ball.
Jay, you know what the good version of that is? Is not playing it. They got to stop. It's not going to work. He's going to carve
you
up.
So you think
they
should switch?
Absolutely. Switch and make Jordan Poole beat you. Make Otto Porter beat you. Make Draymond, who's like crazy in his head right now, beat you. Make Clay beat you even. Like, Clay's taking terrible shots. They're forcing Clay to really hunt.
But if you switch, isn't Steph going to be the one that beats you?
No, switch it again.
Horford hasn't been able to stay with him.
Blitz
Robert
him.
Williams
get the ball
is a little
out of his hands.
Double.
But if you do that, then all of a sudden Draymond's a factor again.
No,
like,
he's not.
I get it. Like,
I'd at least
want to
find out if he is.
I mean, here's the thing.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. Everybody's going nuts with the play Draymond made to Looney at the end of the game. Yo, he did not even look at the basket as he was driving. The move for Horford should have been, I'm just going to late contest Draymond on that because he did not want to shoot that at all. And he did not want to shoot at all in that game. Honestly, I would just double Curry, get it out of his hands, and deal with the rest afterwards. You'll be fine. Can't let Curry light you up for 43. And some of these shots were insane, but you got to get out of this drop coverage.
See, I think, if you look at the half court number, I'm just kind of playing devil's advocate here because obviously, like, they need to do a better job on Steph. They need to find a way for Steph not to just torture them. But playing devil's advocate, the Warriors only scored 83.9 points per 100 plays in the half court. That's 18th percentile according to Cleaning the Glass in these playoffs. And so to me, the bigger issue, rather than the job they did on Steph, like, they were able to cut off the Warriors in the half court for the most part. The bigger issue was bad offense bleeding into the defense. And that's where they've been killed so many times throughout the postseason. That's where when things go wrong for the Celtics, it's almost always the same thing. They start turning the ball over. They start taking bad shots. And then the other team star just tortures them the other way. And so that's the bigger issue to me, rather than what you're doing with Stephen Curry. It's what are you doing with the ball in your hands to help the Warriors get going the other way.
And I think most of their drop coverage mistakes happen in transition, to Jay's point. Like, when they're settled in, unless it's Rob Williams, who's going to screw up and he's going to drop when he doesn't need to, they're generally getting up high enough on the screens that it is essentially a bit of a blitz or a switch. So it's mostly that when Steph is just coming down and they send him that 35-foot screen early, they're already backpedaling so deep that they're just not ready to be in position for
it. I think that's fair, but isn't that part of the problem of having drop coverage be your go-to defense of that? Because that's where, like, especially if you're turning the ball over, Celtics have a problem with turnovers. When you're turning the ball over, that's going to be something that the Warriors are hunting to do. And so I'm going to drop a name here. I hope you guys don't mind. I was talking to Olden Polonese on the radio last night. And
I expected someone different than Olden Polonese.
To Olden Polonese on the radio last night and asked him about
the
drop coverage. And he said, look, he said, the problem is that even against Steph, your muscle memory when playing drop coverage is to sag off, right? To protect the paint. So even like when you're at your most tired, where you're in that mode, your muscle memory is still going to kick in. Like, yes, you should be hyper-focused for the NBA finals and everything, but that is asking a lot. And so I think in those transition moments, like Jared's talking about, I think your natural inclination is to drop to protect the paint. It's transition and everything. And that's part of the problem of not playing a more switching style. And look, you bring up the point, Jay, about that's when Draymond can be effective. Normally I would agree with you, but we have seen instances in the past. I'll drop another name. I was reminded of this by talking to Marcus Thompson this morning on the radio of
where does
big,
he write
a bigger name than big, the other one?
I don't know. He's just some this reporter. I can't remember where he is.
Okay, gotcha. This reporter. What a moment that was.
That was fantastic. And also his phone going off constantly in these press conferences. I was like, my goodness, like be a
did his daughter
he's
put on
show.
A show during the
he's
finals.
He's gotta be a professional. I mean, come on, Marcus, what are you doing? But with this, you know, in terms of Draymond, he has struggled in the past against athletic big front courts. He did it against OKC in 2016. He did it against Memphis a little bit in the second round. Like, I think that yes, you do open up the possibility for Draymond to be more effective here, but I think Al Horford and Robert Williams III, James, I think those are problems for Draymond right now. I think those are problems he hasn't really solved offensively in real time.
Oh, 100%. And I think you said it a few moments ago, like Draymond is in his head. And I don't want to say like he's intimidated by Williams and Horford, but it's certainly
even his mom is chirping him.
That's the best part of it. His mom's like, quit tweet me. I don't know. This isn't the Draymond I know. That's gangster.
He's certainly like he is. And to Mo's point, like, yes, he got an assist to Kevin Looney, but he should have shot the basketball on that when he's right in front of the rim. Like, he's not even looking to score. I think he's just naturally right now at this point in time in his head, just because of the impact Robert Williams has had on him. Robert Williams, not even just blocking shots. I think Robert Williams, just physical presence has kind of just had him a little startled, getting rebounds over him. Like, how many times can we count that? I think he's in his head on top of like just not seeing shots go in for a long time. Like, there's a multitude of things that are kind of forming this, uncharacteristic Draymond that we're seeing. And I credit to him for at least recognizing it and not trying to force his way into rhythm like Clay.
Oh,
and trying to make the right play. But there is no question, like, he is in his head. The presence of Williams and Horford is always in the front of his mind. And I think it's as simple as that. Like, you can just see it. Like, he just doesn't want to look at the rim. He doesn't want to get near the rim. It is what it is. Which, like, I understand it.
Which is fine, but Mo, when it affects Draymond's playmaking, right? That's, I think, where, like, no one thinks he's a threat to score. Like, no, right. Like, the Celtics aren't out here like, oh, I hope he doesn't try to take a shot here. Like, they're kind of hoping he does. And he's, when he becomes unsure of himself with the ball, I do think that bleeds into his playmaking. Like, we saw it. There was a play with him and Wiggins playing a two-man game where both of them were Jackie Moon. Like, they didn't want him in the post yet. They weren't ready. Like, go back out. Like, they played hot potato with it. I'm like, what do you do? Someone do something with the ball.
And then Draymond had to shoot it because it was like a second left on the shot clock. Yeah. And he missed it. But it was, you know, it's the problem with it is, like, when you're a playmaker, especially a guy like Draymond, you have to at least be somewhat of a threat to score, or at least show that, hey, I will take the open layup if it's there.
That you fake know, dribble handoff where he drives the basket and gets a dunk.
It's not
right
there again. Anymore. Yeah, he's just not creating advantages.
But he's not looking for it as much. There are little opportunities there and there. He has to go do it. You're at the point now where you know, you just play him for the pass. And that's just what you do on all these situations. And there are situations where he'll get an offensive rebound, be right at the basket, and he's like, nope, going to kick this one out. And it's a worry of, you know, Robert Williams is around, you know, Horford's pretty good at the rim and things like that. He has to take a couple of shots at the rim. And it's that simple, you know, it, for him to make the playmaking stuff that's open, because the Celtics are literally just going to start staying home on guys. Like, I think that will be the report in the next game. You know, if I'm Udoka saying, hey, when Draymond's coming down the lane, just go suck up to Looney in the dunker spot. Stay home with your shooters. Let's see if Draymond can make some layups.
I looked back.
And when Draymond's getting the ball on the elbow, his man is completely sinking off of him and sitting in the lane to basically take away any sort of entry pass he can make. And he's not willing to dribble into the paint and drive at that space. So he's just kind of sitting there stationary waiting for someone to come over to him.
Should they continue limiting Draymond's role?
No. I think when Kerr took him out in the fourth quarter and he and Draymond talked about it, what's funny is he talked about it on his pod. He goes, I know what everybody wants to talk about. And I immediately thought, like, oh, yeah, Steph Curry's performance. He's like, Steve Kerr benching me in the fourth quarter. I was like, oh, right. Yeah, I guess this is very Draymond-centric here. But Draymond talked about that of, like, look, he doesn't agree with it. He has a problem with it because he wants to be out there and play. He's a competitor and all this stuff. But he thinks, like, Steve made a good move. And he even talked about he's never understood why – because a guy has a resume and he's playing poorly, but because he has a resume, a coach will feel the need to, like, bring him back into the fold, right? And that, like, you should, if a team has something going, if they got a rhythm going with a certain unit, like, you know, ride that until it's not there anymore. And so that kind of speaks to him, right? Like, bringing him back in is like, look, Draymond's got a resume and we know he's brought it in big moments before. And to his credit, like, he had a pretty solid fourth quarter. Like, defense was there. Had a couple of a couple of nice plays, rebounded a little bit. So it's not like he was a zero or a negative out there in the fourth. Like, I think he kind of pulled it together enough. But at a certain point, like, yeah, I think that was a wake-up call. Because if you think about it, like, Draymond doesn't really get a lot of consequences, right? Like, he gets that first tech and immediately, like, takes it up to another level. And knowing, like, he's not going to get thrown out, like, he can kind of talk shit to Steve Kerr and to some of the teammates and stuff. And it's just like, oh, it's just Draymond being Draymond. But this was something where it's like, yo, you're playing like shit. Yeah. You're like, you cannot be on the floor for us right now. And so, and I think it's enough of a wake up where I don't think that needs to happen again, because I think it's helped center him going into game five. Maybe I'm wrong on that, but, like, I do believe that, like, he can finally get all that noise and pressure from the 3 and 4 in Boston and now just kind of get back to even and build his way up.
Yeah. And I trust him to do that. I think that's a Draymond specific thing.
Yeah, I think you have
thing.
To, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It was really cool the way he handled that, I thought.
I agree. It's a very Draymond answer.
Of course, he kind of snapped on the bench because he's a competitor and he wants to be in there. But after the win, he didn't let it affect him at all. He was happy as hell that they won. He basically said it was the right decision. He held himself completely accountable. He's got his mom on Twitter being like, that imposter is not my son. I don't know who the hell that is. And so you can tell he's just very accountable. And it sort of validates who he's been his whole career. You know, he's always won on his terms until now, I think,
right,
with being the playmaker that he wants to be, being the central piece of their offense, their defense, everything they do. And so this is really one of the first times he's had to, since cracking into the rotation, since the death lineup was created, since all of that, one of the first times he's had to look at it and realize maybe I'm not always the best option for my team. And to take that in stride,
yeah,
in the NBA finals,
that takes some maturity.
That's, yeah, that takes some serious accountability and some serious desire to win and put winning ahead of everything else, even yourself. And
especially with the pressure of podcasting right after the game.
Right.
You know, it's like we know when we've got to go right after a game. That's difficult.
Imagine,
man,
if they had lost that podcast. Would have been so crazy.
My God. If they pull him in the fourth and then they lose that game. Woo, that, oh man, I actually, like, okay, if I take
just
it back.
Given up an 8-0 run Warriors after won. They took him out.
I'm mad the Warriors won game 4. I would rather the 3-1 deficit and that podcast is way more entertaining. I was wrong on that.
It comes down to understanding that we have our certain pep plays and actions that we have done for years and years and years. They've scouted it. They have a certain approach and personnel that's trying to take those away. And some of our bread and butter plays, but a lot of it is just being a lot more organized on our spacing and our force on pick and rolls, on cuts and stuff like that, so that we can just get everybody in the right spots, and whether they want to shade, you know, off a certain guy or try to clog things up, we have a counter to all of that. And I think he is going to do an amazing job of adapting and figuring out where he can find his angles, his ways to impact on the offensive end, and that'll again feed off of the way he impacts the game on the defensive end every game. So usually the high IQ guys figure it out, and he's at the top of that list when it comes to understanding the game of basketball.
Jared, do you think that Ime Udoka was just like licking his chops when he saw Steve Kerr inexplicably go to a small lineup against a team that he can't rebound against?
I think he would have been if Rob Williams hadn't gotten hurt. And I know he said that he didn't see anything wrong with Rob, but like clearly the Warriors did. And the Warriors kept targeting him over and over again. I think if Rob was still healthy at the end there, they probably would have been able to utilize that advantage, but he couldn't really move on the defensive end. So they couldn't really do any of the switching stuff they wanted to do. And then they couldn't really figure out how to use him offensively. So yeah, he might've been licking his chops. And then
isn't it bizarre that we're in an NBA finals where it's like, yep, Steph Curry and Andrew Wiggins and Kevon Looney, these three have to be on the court at all times. Then we'll figure out two other Warriors to be out there.
If they said this 3 years ago, I would have just been like, you are absolutely lying.
They said it 9 months ago, you would have been confused. Right.
I would have just thought, like, what happened to the team?
Are they playing against the Suns and everybody, or are they playing against the Nets and everybody got injured or COVID or something? Like what happened?
What are we doing? Like, I would have been just so, it just doesn't make sense. But we got to also shout out Looney, because he's been freaking unbelievable.
He's been great, man.
I thought it was coaching malpractice.
He's such a good rebounder.
It was asinine that he only got 17 minutes in game 3, because he was good even in game 3.
Banging this drum the whole time.
No, I'm so pissed about it, and I was pissed when he wasn't in the starting lineup, because you know what, he's been unbelievable for this team. He's rebounding, he's getting offensive rebounds. Yo, the Celtics screwed up. With him out, they were only up 6. They blew opportunities there. Bad shots, bad not getting back on defense, things like that. They should have been up 12 at that point. When he came back in the game, started crushing them, getting on the offensive boards, got an offensive rebound, kicked it out to Wiggins for a 3, just finding other opportunities. Like, he's been unbelievable for the Warriors. Like, he's been one of their unsung heroes, him and Andrew Wiggins.
The bar is pretty low, but yeah, he has been.
But he's raised it. He's
no,
been,
I agree.
He's been really freaking
Wiggs,
good.
Wiggs has been amazing, man.
I love Wiggs. Oh, man. He's taken some bad I didn't think he took any bad shots in game four. Game three, there were some bad shots.
Yeah.
But in game four, he looked like he was less afraid of Robert Williams. Like, it was the first three games, there were some moments, like, when he went to the rim, like, it just didn't look like vintage Wig. But I think in game four, he settled
in. Is there
in.
A vintage Wig?
Oh, there's a vintage Wig, baby. There's an
absolute. I don't know if.
Him in high school.
Oh, boy. I'm thinking of vintage Wig, back in Minnesota.
You guys didn't watch rookie year Andrew Wiggins, where he's defending Chris Paul and Jimmy Butler and James Harden and dropping 20 a night. You guys weren't there. You guys don't remember. You guys aren't league
what
passing
were those
junkies.
Guys doing when he was defending them?
They actually were struggling. I wrote about it once on CBS Sports, and I don't know. They got rid of most of my articles on there, so...
You could only write about it once. It didn't last long. It was only
three games here, you know, for a team that's, you know, 50 games under 500. It's not his fault. David Kahn screwed him up for a decade, and they had to dig themselves out of a hole after Kevin McHale screwed him up for 15 years before that, and they had to dig their way out of a hole.
I forgot about David Kahn.
I did, too. That was the first time I heard
that's such a fucking fraud.
I do want to shout out Wiggins just coming out with the assertiveness in game four. The post-up. Shot clock winding down, turnaround face up. Like he came into that game. He's a killer in the post, man.
He's so good.
He is. Yeah. But even just to have that mentality, like that's kind of always been like the question with Wiggins. Like, is he a killer? Is he a dog? Like, and he came into that game like
rebounds.
I forgot about that.
He talked about it after the game where he was like, look, we just got destroyed on the boards and we're starting small. Like, I knew I had to go rebound. And he had those two massive offensive rebounds and putbacks in the fourth quarter. Like, he's been spectacular.
I've loved his mentality.
Many are wondering if he'll get finals MVP over Steph. Like, many are just, you know, that's kind of the scuttlebutt around the NBA circles right now. But we'll move on to a different subject. We don't need to dig
That's kind of what they did when they beat LeBron.
What? Is just gave it to someone who didn't deserve it.
Gave it to the dude guarding the best player on the other team.
Yeah. Well, give it to the small four.
Yeah, Jay, let's talk about that. Let's talk about why Jason Tatum cannot make two-point shots.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
What is going on here? What is going on with that offense? I keep going back to game one is like the Tatum that I want to see. And now he didn't make shots in game one, right? He was 3-for-17. It was 2-for-11 on uncontested shots. But I thought that was his best offensive approach. And he actually just missed shots he would normally make. But I liked his aggressiveness there. And now, you know, it's always going to look worse in the losses. But, man, he was non-existent in the fourth quarter. And this is something where, look, it's not that he's going against a bad defense. Warriors are great defense. And he's going against tough individual defenders and tough help defenders and everything, but he does have to be better. And that seems a little unfair for a guy that took out Kevin Durant and took out Giannis and then took out Jimmy Butler to now have to take out Steph Curry. But like, that's the job.
That's the burden.
Yeah.
That's it. If you're a superstar and he's become that, then these are the challenges you have to handle against the second best defense in the league. Against Andrew Wiggins as your primary defender, and Draymond Green as a help defender, and Looney as a help defender. And the Warriors do such a great job of helping, stunting, like making you feel them even when they're not really there, if that makes sense. And so I think he's been off balance because of that. And if you look backwards, like the Bucks series, they basically just had guys at the rim and had somebody trailing over a screen, and he was able to just have tons of space, and he eventually figured out what to do with it. The Heat series, it was a different type of series, just a ton of physicality, a lot of like very good individual defenders. The Warriors are a different team because their help defense is so good and so smart. And so he's just got to figure that out. And he hasn't yet. 14 of 51 so far from inside the two-point arc, which seems impossible. how is he shooting only 27.5% from twos? From twos. And he's passing the ball. He's finding guys open. But the Celtics need more from him, especially when Curry's going the way that he is.
Yeah, you just got to respond, and right? You got
to
find
a way. You need to stop the run. You know, you need to stop that. Get your defense a chance to set up in the half court. And the turnovers have been an issue throughout the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Not every game, but just
feels like
some just truly bad passes. The one when Bielitsa was on him and he tried to throw the cross court pass. Yeah, I think it was Grant Williams.
Yeah,
that was so it wasn't even close.
Yeah, it wasn't even remotely close. And you could see what they were trying to set up. Robert Williams was setting the screen there and he thought Wiggins would get caught on the screen, but it's like just a bad pass that had such a low percentage of getting through. And he hasn't been able to like find the right matchups in the right positions. I keep thinking to how they've gone at Bielitsa. It's like Bielitsa's okay one-on-one. Like if you put him in an isolation situation, he's big enough, he's smart enough, he can force you into something tough. Mm-hmm. So go at somebody else, go at Jordan Poole, or get Bielitsa in like a situation where he's closing out. You know, right. I don't think they've put Tatum into the right positions, or maybe it's on Tatum. I don't know who it's on, whether it's coaching staff, players, Tatum himself, but they've got to do a better job of finding him in situations where he has a better chance to produce a good look, because they need more efficient scoring from him over the next three games. Because, man, beating the Warriors in Chase Center in game five or game seven is going to be a bear.
Yeah, it is. But Jared, like, they keep winning on the road, right? Like, the Celtics have done this. I don't know if you can keep counting on that, but you know, they've done it. So they got to do it at least one more time.
Well, the ultimate irony is that they call themselves the Road Warriors. So if they beat the Warriors on the road, it would make it the greatest nickname of all time, right?
Yeah, I don't like that.
Which one would be the Road Warriors?
Yeah.
You know, the funny thing is just even going back to Tatum, he's front rimming all of his misses in the 2-point range, whether it's his turnaround 18 footer, layups where he's trying to finish over a long defender. I don't know if it's that the Warriors have a bunch of long wings that are affecting him more than he saw in the previous series, or that his legs are tired, but
or shoulder, if you look the at, shoulder issue
or the shoulder, the stinger, but either way, it's not like he's missing long. Like, he's missing either a little to the right or a little short on every single one of those, including some kind of like floater layups that he usually is pretty good getting off the glass. So I think the stinger just might be affecting him, or his legs might be affecting him.
The other thing is a lot of his shots are tough twos, right? Contested mid-range pull-ups. You know, he's in game four in the second half, only one layup, you know, like only one play at the rim. He made it, but it was only one. Like everything else was on the outside in that. Some of that's good defense.
Had to miss over Clay too.
Oh, sorry. So
two. Which was amazing defense by Clay on a great cut by him. Yeah.
But also you got to go stronger. Like you cannot let Clay Thompson stop you if you're at the rim. You can't. Like, just finish through him. You're 3 inches taller. You're stronger.
Yeah, you just got probably 20 pounds on him.
And some of it athletic. He's trying to get the foul more than the shot, right? I feel like that's something that's kind of been a thing, and he's been so programmed to, I have to get to the free throw line, that he's like, hey, you should also try to make some of these. And I think that the shot selection that he's had in the inside too, the inside the 3-point line, has been a problem. And I think he's got to be more aggressive and just be angry at the rim. Just go in there trying to dunk something. Go in there and poster on somebody. Like, these are my problems with some of Tatum's shots.
I was going to ask you guys, is that where kind of maybe the Kobe influence backfires? Like, just the tough mid twos that he probably fell in love watching Kobe doing and working with him. And then you get to this stage that you've never been to, your legs are a little tired, you're injured, and it's just not a great shot for somebody not named Kobe.
I think it's a fair question because, look, I know Gary Payton II is a really good defender, but there are times, like, the Warriors are actively putting him on Tatum, right? It's not like they're getting this into a switch. Like Warriors, like, yeah, we want him defending Tatum in these spots. And he's still like kind of fading against. I'm like, you're 7 inches taller than this dude. Just go straight up. Like either go through him and, you know, kind of like Jay's talking about on that play against Clay, like go through Peyton and make them call a foul or just rise up over him. You don't need to fade away. He's never going to block that shot. He might touch your chin on a contest, but he's not like he's not going to block that shot. So as long as you keep the ball high and don't give him a chance to strip it on the way up, like you could just got to go straight up against him in that matchup. That is an advantageous matchup for you.
Yeah. When I see those shots, I just wonder, and I'm not blaming Tatum's performance on the great Kobe Bryant. It's just something that I think about is just maybe ingrained in his fabric.
I mean, it's fair because it's the shit that they had to kind of ask him to stop doing this year, right? That's part of the turnaround.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Did they get nervous when they saw the 24 armband?
Yeah. Did Boston's Jay or Jared, did Boston fans like say anything about that? Like, do they care?
No, they don't.
As long as they get a title, they're not going to give a shit, right?
It's part of the story. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, he better win then. He better win with that because it's coming in the summertime.
I mean, he's
wearing the Kobe armband. Like, he's going to be going nuts.
I saw some graphic on IG where, like, someone in LA, I think, reported that, like, there's rumblings that Tatum wants to go back to LA at some point. Then I saw there was, like, a LeBron James and Anthony Davis for Jason Tatum trade proposal. So, you know, like, I'm sure that there's plenty
of people out there. Oh, that's 100% going to happen. Yeah.
I mean, the salary works out. So we know
sounds realistic.
Happen. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, we can just report that now.
That's sick.
If they lose, he's getting traded to the Lakers, right?
Well, we talk about Anthony Davis saying he hasn't shot a ball since April.
That's fine.
April 5th, he said.
Did he say that? I missed that.
When's the season start? October. He's fine. Yeah, we can wait
just
on
needs,
that.
Okay. He just needs to be prepared to play in 50 games every year. And that's all he's got to do.
It's health. It's more about health than anything else.
When guys say stuff like that, I agree. He's probably going to be fine. Like it doesn't matter. He'll have plenty of time to ramp up, to work on his game, to do the things he needs to do.
I just wouldn't say it.
Don't you just love hoops enough? You just want to go out and shoot and play?
That's the thing to me.
That's the thing to me. Like, don't you want to be out there playing pickup? Well, don't you want to be out there shooting
around?
Jay, like
after this finals run, are you going to be excited to write a story 3 weeks after?
I mean, I will be
breaking down the 53rd pick
2 weeks
in the Celtics,
later. Yeah. Breaking down Juhan Bejerin,
but are you going to love it?
He's a problem. I like him.
But
he's
we equate this like whole thing of like, well, if you love it, you got to play it all the time and da 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 this and that. Yo, oh, dude, that.
I normally agree, Mo. Two months, a long time not to pick up a basketball.
It's a long time. It's not like he took a couple weeks off. And plus, also, maybe you should be shooting, man. Maybe you should be shooting.
No, man, like, he's not, like, just give it time. Like, if it's September and we're like, I haven't touched the ball since April, then it's like, okay, we have issues. But I think ultimately, I think he can chill basically until the season ends, which is whenever this series ends. He can start going in like July and August and be fine. Like, his bigger issue is can you stay healthy, dude?
Well, I don't think he needs to like work on his shot. You never know if we're going to go back to a bubble situation, you know? COVID surging, like, we might get back to that sweet spot where he's in an empty gym to play real NBA games. Then he'll be just fine shooting.
Yeah, so that's not the problem. It's the fans. He needs to depress. He needs the Lakers to cut out fans.
Yeah, Lakers need to stop letting fans into Crypto.Staples Arena or whatever that is. I don't know if crypto's still a thing at this point, but I know Jay is our crypto analyst here. Crypto's still a big thing?
Yeah, baby.
Okay, there you go. So,
of course you're a crypto guy.
It's been struggling lately.
Jay, you're a crypto guy? This is an actual thing.
Jay's a crypto.
I'm a Bitcoin head.
I didn't know that.
Jay's gonna put .eth at the end of his Twitter handle soon.
Does the Athletic pay you in crypto?
You better hope not.
just give it time, boys.
Okay.
Yeah.
Jay Dinwiddie.
Just give it time. But Anthony Davis hasn't picked up a ball in 2 months, and you're freaking out.
Jay hasn't seen a dollar in 3 years because of the crypto. Like, but hey,
All right, before we get out of here, I do want to take the temperature of everybody. So we're now in a best of three, right? Game five, game six, game seven. And so, James, where do you think this series is going? Has anything changed from what you thought prior to the series?
No. I think every flaw that both teams has showed at various points. I think every strength that both team has showed it at various points. I think it's just a matter. It's almost like a war of attrition in regards to, and I think we talked about it. I don't know if it was last week or 2 weeks ago. Zach, you said the Celtics are the better team, but the Warriors are the smarter team. And I still just worry about those Celtics in the fourth quarter, the stagnation.
Yeah.
And I think that's, and I said it then, I think it's just built into their fabric. And while the Warriors offense hasn't moved as effortlessly and freely as we're accustomed to, the fact that Steph has only gotten better makes me think that there's going to be a point where they're going to need to go bucket for bucket. And as much as I don't trust Klay and Jordan Poole right now, I just imagine there's going to be a Klay or Jordan Poole game at least one time in these next three.
Game six is going to happen for sure. So, well, you know,
Klay was
great defensively down the stretch of game four.
He was, yeah.
He was. Man, yeah, he was. Yep.
Like, he really, really found a way, because he hasn't been defending at his normal level since he came back. Mm-mm. And that fourth quarter, he was keeping Jaylen Brown in front. He was forcing him to do tough stuff. It was just truly like the competitive fabric came out in that point, I felt like.
I agree.
He just willed himself to have a great, great, great defensive quarter.
So I'm going to say Warriors in six.
Warriors in six. Interesting. Okay, Jared, what about you? Has anything changed from your thoughts going into the series, and where do you think this best of three goes?
I just thought they were going to switch more on Curry earlier on. I feel like that's the big, like, there's going to be some big change for each team going into game five. And I think maybe that's the one that we see more. So that, and I think just with Boston, it's off. It's the stagnation thing. That's always been the thing with them the entire year. It's always been their defense holds up against whatever's thrown at it. And can their offense stick to its principles late in games? So we got a Marcus Smart game coming here. It doesn't mean it's going to be a great game. It means
it's going to
be a
bad thing. I don't know if that's a threat or a promise. That's
exactly. He doesn't know either.
That's, right? I guess that's the thrill of it, right?
He just goes for it. So that's going to be
I
it.
I think he's been pretty good this year.
No, he's been pretty good. Yeah.
But he hasn't really, like, he hasn't seized control of the fourth quarter a ton. And, I mean, we just got our first crunch time last game. But I assume they're all going to be pretty tight from here on out. So
yeah.
I think he's going to decide, for better or for worse, whether they're going to win the series by whether or not they're going to actually have a coherent crunch time offense. And so I'm still leaning Warriors. I had Warriors in seven at the start. I think I'm still leaning Warriors in seven. But
coward's pick.
The series is a crapshoot. And I am a coward, but I just think predictions are bullshit also.
But the title is going to be determined on who's worse between Klay and Marcus Smart.
That's fantastic. Yeah, what a thrilling ride that is.
Yeah. But the thing about Marcus Smart is it's a good one. It's a catch and shoot situation. Please, no more ISO pull up. On three, you know, step back threes, like, those
so
are just
more,
like,
it's so much more fun than a catch and shoot situation. Like, that's what you want
to
run, man.
You don't want it to go in.
This is what J.R. Smith was talking about years ago. He's like, open shots are boring, man, and they are.
And when Smart gets ISO and he forces his way into the paint,
they're certainly boring
for
Anthony Davis.
Mo, has anything changed for you since before this series started, and where do you think this best of three goes?
Well, I've said from the beginning, seven game series, Warriors.
Coward.
Yeah, whatever. I think they take game five. I think they break the Celtics' streak of no back-to-back losses. I can't speak English all of a sudden ever. But I think that they break the streak there. I think they take game five. And it just, everybody protects home court. We get game seven, and the Warriors are going to come out game seven, and Curry's finally going to get a finals MVP, and everybody or can Wiggins. Get off that man's fucking back.
Or Wiggins.
Yeah, please start pushing that.
Come on, Looney.
I'm going to start putting him at the top of my finals MVP rankings at those updates every night. Jay, what about you? Anything changed since the beginning of this series, and where do you think this best of three is going?
I'm going to stick with Celtics in six just because – I said that before the series, and I don't want to call myself a liar at this stage.
No, when there's someone doesn't like the hedge, despite being into crypto. That is not
my new prediction, which isn't even that bold at this point, is Steph is going to get his first Finals MVP in a loss.
What?
Yeah.
Wow.
He's going to get the Finals MVP in a loss.
I hate that. I mean, I would hate if that happens. I like the prediction. It's a bold prediction, but man.
I don't think it's even that bold. Like, if they do lose and he somewhat keeps it up, you have to give it to him, right?
Nobody from Boston has seized the moment.
But I think you got, if you're going to give it to a dude in a loss, I think it's got to go seven.
That's the most fucked up way this could go for Steph, right? You finally get your Finals MVP, but it's in a loss, and that and no one will ever count it.
Oh God,
no! Because of that, right?
Yeah, that would be trash.
Did anybody count?
The fact that he even needs that for people to shut up already annoys me. The fact that if that happened, there's like. You can't say anything as a Steph supporter.
No, like, of course not. Like,
it's kind of bullshit.
It's such a stupid idea. Yeah.
No, it is.
But he would finally win T-Max approval, and that's what matters.
That's true. That's what. Well, again, he just started following me on Twitter, so it's no T-Max slander allowed.
Where are you at, Zach? Because you said woe to me and Warriors in six. You told them that they're cowards for anybody in seven. Yeah. Where are you at?
Yeah, Celtics in five.
Celtics in five, I still believe in that prediction. I think they win game five so demonstrably.
I had to do math in my head to like see if that was
I think,
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill, you might win some, but you just lost one trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them. You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy!
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds!
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
I do think that...
I think if the Warriors win five, they win in six.
I actually think... Yeah, I think I agree with that, but I kind of feel like this would be a very Celtics thing for them to win... Game five, lose game six, and then win game seven on the Warriors floor.
Right? That would be the most Celtics.
That feels very Celtics. I still think the Celtics are the better team, but yeah, I mean, Steph is just more built for this than anybody else on the floor, right? And that's the thing that's fucking with me is because I don't think anything about the way the Warriors have played has shown that they're the better team. They just have the best player.
They've actually been gross, if we're being honest.
Yeah, like, well, that was the
like
funny
they just
thing.
Haven't been very good.
That was a funny thing. Like Steph said after game one, he was like, we had 108 points. That should be enough. And to me, I was like, what are you talking about? Now, granted, they've held the Celtics under 100 points in their two wins. So I guess technically he's right. Like when they defend the way they can, that's enough scoring. So I guess they don't need that much. But I also look at it as the Celtics beat themselves with these turnovers. Mm-hmm. They're not even – it's not like the Warriors are playing – great defense to the point that they're stuck and they have, it's like that, you know, you mentioned that pass to, what was it? Grant Williams in the corner. What, like the Celtics are just making the dumbest turnovers and they're all live ball. I still firmly believe they would be so much better off if they were about to turn the ball over to just throw it into the stands. Like halfway up the lower bowl.
Dwayne Casey talks about that all the time. He's like, I get pissed when it's live ball. He's like, if you're going to turn the ball over, throw it into the 15th
row. Travel.
One
like
of my
charge.
College coaches used to say that all the time. Just kick the fucking thing in the crowd.
It's like the most coach speak
shit. When you guys that was whenever 22? You were shooting, though, Jay.
Yeah, that's.
Yeah, I could shoot. But I wasn't on the court anyway.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I can't shake the idea that the Celtics are the better team. And I think some of that has been Klay just not quite being Klay, and some of that has been Jordan Poole being really a non-factor for most of the series. And some of that has been whatever the fuck happened to Draymond
the
last
Steph,
two games.
Man. It's just
you're
Steph.
Right. It's just Steph is it's messing
Steph
with me.
And some competitive dudes who play defense.
I'm gonna stick with the Celtics. I'm gonna say Celtics in seven.
Coward.
Winning game five, coward. Losing game six, winning game seven. Now that's as brave as you can get here.
No,
I'm gonna say, because I do think it's weird, but I also like, man, if you told me Steph just went off for the next two games and it was Warriors in six, I'm not gonna be surprised by that. I don't feel good about the prediction.
I expect it.
I just don't.
I don't know. I just expect.
I just can't see the Celtics losing three in a row. Like
that's fair.
That's my only thing about Warriors and six.
If they were gonna crumble, wouldn't this be the way they crumble?
Yeah, it will be, with your back elimination game. Like I don't know if this Celtics team is built for being down 3-2.
I mean, didn't they come back against the Bucks?
Okay, yeah, you're right. So let me shut up. You're right.
But also, all right. Well, I mean, if we wanted like. You know, start making excuses and stuff like no Chris Middleton, that matters.
No,
this is the finals.
Yeah, this is the finals. Like, I mean, I don't know. You can parse that way out.
Don't
any way you want.
If I said that, Zach, you'd be all over me. Don't try to defend James.
That's my guy.
Also, is this Warriors team that much better than or even better than a Milwaukee team without Chris Middleton?
They're different.
I mean, what's funny is like this is the worst Warriors team that's made a finals.
Yeah,
by far.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Like easily the best or close. The worst. Like it's. I mean, it's crazy. Like yeah. I mean, fuck.
We're
no, I'm changing it.
LeBron.
Steph's gonna do it, and I'll just believe in Steph. I can't do it. I can't do this thing anymore.
Yes. There you go.
It's just I just believe in Steph at this point. He's too good.
Yeah,
he's a joke,
and he's not injured.
He is, and yet he's still that good.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they're going to have to do some real goon stuff to get him out of the series because they tried, right? They tried. Al Horford, you look at Draymond Green. Draymond Green fouled out to save Steph Curry's ankle, to save his foot. What a valiant effort that was in game three.
I need to get those Curry 4s with the tethers attached. Did you guys see the photo, the up-close photo of his shoes?
No.
Let me send those. Hold on, I'm going to send it in the group text. It literally looks like he's wearing two tethers on top of high-top shoes. It's the funniest shit in the world.
I can't even picture what you're describing. I don't even know what that means.
I'll send it. Hold on. Okay. Hopefully,
like
I can find it.
The brace things are
off.
Attached to the shoe.
They look like tethers.
Oh wait, I think I saw it because I think I made a comment like his braces look like Forrest Gump's leg braces.
Maybe I thought somebody I saw that tweet, but I thought somebody took a different photo.
They do, man. Like they showed his ankle braces. I was like, what the fuck are those? Those are a medieval contraption for torture.
Run, Steph.
That's it, guys. We've gone too far. We've gone too far.
Something that's interesting that as I'll just filibuster as James looks for this picture. Talking to Amin on the radio this morning, he mentioned that he thought the LVP for both teams were their coaches. Like, he thinks Ime, because of this drop coverage, he thinks Steve Kerr for some of these decisions on, like, whether or not to play Kevon Looney. Like, I do think both these guys have done a pretty good job coaching, but there is something left to be desired in the series.
I mean, they've left money on the table on both sides. I don't know if I would say they're the LVP, but they're in the mix. They'd get a few votes. I don't know if they'd win it, but they're right there. I think we got to look at some of just Smart's shot selection. Some of his greatest Steph's been, some of his turnovers have been kind of wild. Like,
yeah, that's to be expected, right?
Yeah. I mean, like, there are some stuff where it's just you watch. So I'm not sure I'm going to put it all on the coaches, because they've also made good moves. So yeah. I'm not going to go with they're the LVPs. James, find photo the sent. Freaking photo.
Yeah, I know.
Photo
sent. Oh, we got it. We got it. These are ankle monitors. What is that?
These look like tethers.
Did he get a DUI?
Is he under house arrest?
It's crazy.
These are ankle monitors. Those aren't tethers.
The comments are hilarious too. It's on Slam Kicks. All right, if you get a chance, check out the comments.
Oh my God. Yeah. No. These are house arrests. The house arrest force.
Like he got them 20-pound ankle weights on him.
House arrest force.
Yeah. Oh, shit. That's going to do it for this edition of the Basket Buds of the Athletic NBA Show podcast. Make sure you subscribe to the show feed.
Somebody said them shit sturdy.
Sturdy is a great word for that. Make sure that you're rating 5 stars and you're subscribed to The Athletic, for crying out loud. Jared and Jay giving you the best coverage of the Celtics for this NBA Finals. And, of course, we got draft stuff coming up with myself and with James Edwards III as he tries to figure out who is going to be that 5th pick in the draft. Will it be Keegan Murray, Shannon Sharp, Jaden Ivey? Who's it going to be, James? Tell us right now.
Dasagna Jop, son.
Wow.
Wow.
That took a turn at the end.
What a strong stance.
Yeah. I'm going whoever is available between Ivy and Murray with the dark horse Benedict Mathurin.
I don't like his name, but ooh, I do like his game.
I like Benny Boy.
Yeah.
Benny Boy can play.
If it was Ben Mathurin or Benny Mathurin, I'd feel so much better. I don't like Benedict as a name. I just hate that name. All right, that's going to do it for us. Make sure you subscribe to The Athletic, the best coverage of sports on the internet. For Mo, for James, for Jay, for Jared, I'm Zach. Thanks for listening to The Athletic NBA Show podcast.